Hello and welcome to the Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, William Liu. I'm joined by the Fan Morning Show's Blake Murphy. Blake, what's going on?
How are you, man?
So we're here to talk about the Raptors, and we're here to do so in a more serious way than when Alex is here. There's not a lot to talk about in terms of, we were just discussing this before the show, that like we end up covering the same themes and generally the same like topics, which I feel like for me might get repetitive, but at the same time, these are this is the team that we're covering, right? And they have, generally speaking, the same weaknesses game in and game out. And of late, it's been the defense that continues to struggle. They were good against the Kings because the Kings are just horrendous.
Yeah, good enough to help get Luke Walton fired.
Yeah, which do you think Luke Walton's going to get another chance?
I hope not.
Yeah.
I think he was really bad, and I think he has some off-court red tape that should have been looked at more thoroughly before he got hired. Mm-hmm. That got really swept under the rug. And
it wasn't under the rug. I mean, it was clearly right there. They just chose to ignore it. They were just like, yeah, we're
cool
with it,
though. Isn't that what sweeping under the rug is?
Is that? I mean, they're not hiding it. Everyone knew that he had allegations.
Yeah, so anyway, the Kings are not a comparison, then? You just got like a dead plant in your room instead of sweeping it under the rug?
Let's say you have a cat, for example, and they, and you know, cats do what
cats do. Wow, after what I told you off the air before we came on, you bring up having a cat.
I'm sorry.
Unbelievable. That's insensitivity here.
You know what? It actually really is really funny. I don't know if that's the time to tell the whole story. But
people can
anyway, so let's say you have a pet, they puke on the floor. You know, like sometimes you're like, all right, this is annoying. I'm going to get to it right now. Or sometimes you're like, I'm too busy. I got to like, you know, get around it. That's kind of what the Kings were just like, we'll get to it later.
If I had a pet who threw up on the floor, I would not get to it later.
It depends.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Like I've never had a cat, but I have fostered dogs regularly. And I would never, like, if they make a mess in the house, I'm not just leaving. Someone else will get it.
Sometimes the cat gets it. Anyway, this is irrelevant. We're here to talk about cat.
So you're suggesting.
We just promised serious basketball talk.
The cat eats its own vomit, so you don't have to worry about cleaning up.
That's not something I would.
This
do
is a great metaphor for the Sacramento Kings.
That is.
Tripped into a good metaphor of, hey, it's been what, 15 coaches or 10 coaches since they last made the playoffs in 15 years?
Yeah, if Luke Walton actually got on the floor and got the towels out and cleaned the puke that was courtside in their last game, maybe he would still have a job. But so outside of that Kings win, which was a fun win, you know, but it was the Kings. The Raptors.
Sometimes you need those, though, right? Like sometimes you need to play a bad team.
I need to play the Kings like 10 times a year.
Yeah. Look, this is like, I don't want to be too glib about it, but like there's a reason why when we do the Raptors Republic 3-on-3 tournament every year.
Mm. Coming up this weekend, by the way.
One division is the blogger division. It's so we can all get, you know, get a good feel going, get a good run in, and not have to play against the actual good teams that come out.
Yeah. Is that how the tournament is stacked this year, by the way?
I'm a little concerned. Zerar handled the schedule. But yeah, so that Kings game, the Raptors had per cleaning the glass, which takes out garbage time, a 90th percentile defensive performance.
Mm-hmm.
The other three games preceding it and the Golden State game were all 6th percentile or worse.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Because I got the defensive ratings right here for the recent games. Stood out to
last
me.
Last nine?
A 123 defensive rating against Golden State. Clearly, they were shooting the lights out. They hit 22 threes. Steph only made one of them.
Yeah. It was a very 2019-2020 Raptors game of.
They did that to the Houston Rockets.
We're going
to
get the ball out of Steph's hands at all costs.
Yeah.
And we're going to bet that your other guys can't beat us. And Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins were up for the challenge. Yeah. And I think that's even harder against. Like, imagine that Golden State team with Draymond's passing, Steph's willingness to get off the ball like that, those like complimentary scores. And then you're dropping Clay back in there in a month.
Yeah. Nah, it's that team is, there's a very good chance they win the NBA championship again, which is kind of be pretty amazing because you don't usually see teams like be dominant, then go dormant, and then come back. It's almost like the only comparison I have is probably the Spurs in basketball.
I mean, you could do the like Michael Jordan Bulls, but instead of him retiring, it was just all the Warriors getting hurt for a couple years.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
The Spurs is probably the best where it's like, well, they win 5 championships over 15 years and none of them were back-to-back.
But who is their Kawhi that came up and was like, all right,
yeah,
we're here to help the old guys?
Yeah, because it's
Jordan Poole? It's not Jordan Poole. Jordan Poole was incredible in the Raptors game. Anyway, so 123 defensive rating against Golden State, 121 against Utah, 126 against Portland, 132 against Detroit, and then 112 against Philly. They won that game. 123 against Brooklyn, 113 against Cleveland. So the defense has just completely collapsed.
So let's zoom out there from that. So okay. Over the last nine, again, this is excluding garbage time because it's cleaning the glass. Mm-hmm. Dead last since November 5th with a 119.5 defensive rating.
Yikes.
That excluding garbage time again. So, you know, you're down 20 or up 20 or whatever. We're taking those possessions out.
Mm.
119.5. It is not even close to any other team.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
That's a lot.
Okay, so let's break that down even further. Okay, so I want to know how much of this is the scheme, how much of this is execution, how much of this is bad luck, and honestly, how much of it is just playing some really tough opposition? Because when you're playing Golden State, Utah, and Portland, those guys are all very good offensive teams. Now, of course, you're playing Detroit in that stretch, you know, but Brooklyn, you know, Philly, they're pretty good offensive teams this year. So let's try to break it down. Let's talk about the scheme first. I feel like that has drawn a lot of conversation, especially on Raptors Twitter. Although Raptors Twitter this season has just really been hard to participate in. It's just not good. I'm sorry, man, but we've done better. Okay, the Raptors Twitter is like the Raptors team itself.
So we're going scheme first.
Let's go with the scheme because Nick Nurse, generally speaking, and this should surprise nobody. We've seen it since he's come here. Is that when star players come in, he will send extra bodies at the star players. Steph Curry, for example, was a classic case. Now, in this case, it was a little different because they basically had Fred guard Steph the whole game, no help responsibilities, nothing.
Just the second he came across half.
Literally, and there was a screen grab that one Warriors fan got where Steph is standing in the corner, like right beside the scorer's table, and he has nothing to do with the play, and Fred is like face guarding him, and it's 4-on-4 the rest of the play. So how much of this is Nick Nurse's scheme in terms of him being willing to double certain players, being willing to sort of bet that the rotations will be able to cover more of the ground? But mostly speaking of late, it's been a lot of wide open corner threes.
Yeah, so I think a good chunk of it is, and I don't mean that to say Nick Nurse's scheme is why they're 30th in the league, but the scheme that they play, which is pretty aggressive, and it's aimed at not only getting the ball out of the hands of stars, but it's aimed at creating a lot of turnovers, and it's aimed at making up for the fact that they don't have traditional rim protection. So they need to keep teams away from the rim. So okay. I would say from the scheme side, what you're looking for is what's the same during this struggle as when, hey, they were sixth in defensive efficiency over the first nine games or in prior years when they've been better defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And the two things that stand out are, one, they send opponents to the line a lot. That is a cost of playing really aggressively. It's a cost of not having natural rim protection. It's a cost of being a fairly inexperienced team outside of your top couple guys.
Yeah.
The other thing is corner threes. So 2019-2020, the Raptors set an all-time record for opponent corner three-point volume.
Mm-hmm.
They are currently, small sample and all, but this season threatening to break their own record.
Oh, great.
Almost 14% of opponent field goal attempts have been have been corner threes.
That's shocking because if you're looking at just like expected value of certain areas, obviously two free throws, that's a very high expected value.
Yeah.
But then a layup is really, in terms of open play, like the most efficient shot. And then next to that is a corner three.
Right.
So that's not good. That's really bad.
That's the scheme element. The scheme kind of accepts, hey, you're going to allow a few more free throws and you're going to allow a lot of corner threes. And what the Raptors bet the trade-off is the turnover amount, over the long haul, you're mm-hmm. going to win the take the ball out of Steph Curry's hands and give it to Jordan Poole, or take the ball out of James Harden's hands and give it to Daniel House.
Yeah.
Like, you're betting that you're going to win those more often than not. So that's the scheme element. Now, there's a huge execution component to this,
right,
too, where, I mean, you can visualize it, right? The Raptors trap high on a ball handler, and then once the ball handler gets off the ball, someone's got to scramble onto that big, and then someone's got to scramble out to that corner shooter, and so on and so on. And it gets really, first of all, it's complicated to know, like, hey, once you're the third or fourth rotation, like, who's your guy?
Yeah.
Like, if you are coming from the weak corner, you know, are you lifting up to the wing shooter, or is someone supposed to be recovering back, or you know, X-ing out is a term. So, you know, you might come up from the weak corner to help a wing shooter, and then instead of recovering back to his own man, the original defender covers your man for you.
Yep.
that takes a lot of being on a string. It takes a lot of communication. It takes a lot of familiarity that the main group here doesn't have together yet, other than Pascal Fred OG. And where you see those costs is, one, again, those corner threes get a little more open.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could dive into those numbers. I think people know what an open quarter three looks like and how often it feels like they're there right now.
Just watch Andrew Wiggins highlights from the last game. Yeah.
And the other part of that is, well, picture what I just described. Who's in position for defensive rebounds and who's responsible for blocking out who? And during this 2-7 stretch, the Raptors have fallen from 9th to 29th in defensive rebounding rate. Mm. And I don't think anyone thought this team that has nobody over 6'9" would be a good defensive rebounding team, but you can't be second last.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. And I'm happy you pointed out the execution portion, because you cannot fully judge the scheme without assessing the execution of said scheme. And I think Chris Black of Sportsnet had a really great thread of this, just breaking down the Warriors game, where it was a lot of breakdowns in terms of two guys rotating to the same player, or, you know, guys flying off of really good shooters to try to close that against really average shooters. And I think that in order to sort of execute this very complex system, which is what you're describing, that's what Nick is trying to do with these guys, you really need to limit your mistakes, just as you would with almost any defense. Obviously, you know, mistakes is going to cost you. But at the same time, there's certain defenses that you can play where you can almost allow for more mistakes to happen. And I think maybe for a younger group that's more prone to mistakes, that has been generally pretty poor at communicating, you know, you can almost exacerbate some of their bad tendencies when you play a complex scheme. So my question to you is, would they get a better result, maybe, let's say, in the short term? Let's just say in the next, like, month, let's say, if they're looking at how they want to play defense for the next month. Would they get a better result playing a simpler scheme? And if so, what is that simpler scheme that they can do here?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a larger philosophical question about whether you'd want to or not, because there is an identity element here and there's a training these guys to play that way element.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you came to Nick Nurse and you were like, hey, you're about to play 10 out of 11 at home once you're off this road trip, you have to win 8 of those games or we're going to be in panic mode. Say that's the scenario. Then yes, I think you make the scheme a little more conservative. And what that looks like is probably, you still probably have to do a good amount of switching to protect the rim. Maybe not even switching, you need to collapse because you don't have a rim protector. You don't, like, Precious is the closest thing you have to a natural rim protector. And his biggest defensive asset right now is that he can switch onto the perimeter. Mm-hmm. It's not him hanging back toward the rim. And like Chris Boucher would be their next best rim protector. And there are a lot of trade-offs that come with having that on the floor. So you would still do some of it, but I think the biggest thing is, where do you need to trap or send help on the floor? And do you need to do it for every matchup? So if OG Anunoby is guarding one-on-one and his man is, you know, looking at a long two, I know that your pinch principles there might have someone sneak in and try to poke that ball free for an easy bucket the other way. Maybe, you know, in the short term, what would be best is you just let your very good defender defend there. They sent two bodies to help Dame posting up Fred the other night.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of, I forget the exact example, but they doubled someone like 20 feet from the hoop against the Pistons. And there are,
by the way, nobody should be doubling the Pistons.
Yeah.
Except for Isaiah Stewart. He should be quadruple teamed when he's although, bleeding from the face.
Apparently Cade needs to be doubled in the clutch, because this is the counter to this, like OG and Pascal haven't defended to their standard yet this year.
That's true.
And Scotty Barnes has been fun and energetic, but like, he's a rookie. He's going to get rooked sometimes and he's going to have a tight whistle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the other element there. So I would say, yes, if you had to maximize the next 10 games, you'd get a little more conservative. You'd trust your guys one-on-one a little bit more. You'd scale back Gary Trent's, you know, leeway in terms of some of the gambles he takes out of the corner, especially in kind of semi-transition. You would do that. But I think big picture, long term, Nick Nurse would tell you, hey, this was a top six defense for 9 games. The personnel's the same and added Pascal Siakam back. And there's a track record of this being effective for this team. So let him coach them up and, you know, have some patience with this. I don't know how patient everyone else is. Like, I don't know, like, your mileage is going to vary with how patient you're willing to be to see what that looks like. But the hard part about this is say you did, you know what, I've had enough. I don't want to run this system anymore. It's too frustrating to see these mistakes off of gambles. Well, what are you going to do? There's not a 7-footer on the roster. There's not, like, Reggie Perry's not coming through that door from the 905. Romaro Gill is not NBA ready from the 905.
All right.
Freddie Gillespie's averaging a double-double down with Memphis.
I'm okay, man.
But he's 6'9" too, so.
We're not going to karaoke. I'm good.
Yeah. So that's the other issue is, like, the scheme has been the scheme back since the Kawhi season, but it's a little bit like they've found at the fringes personnel that fit that scheme too.
Yeah.
So you're a little stuck.
I get it. No, I get it. And these are the decisions that you have to live with in a development season. And Masai did tell us, like, was very clear. Like, he wasn't even like, he couched his statement like, oh, you know, maybe we'll catch some teams by surprise. I think Nick maybe said that in training camp. I think every coach says that in training camp, no matter if their team's good or bad. But Masai told us very clearly, it's a development year. So sometimes you have to make these decisions. I agree with you. I also think that at the same time, so one of the things that Nick has gotten a lot of credit for is the fact that he's had his team prepared to play multiple schemes. I remember in the bubble when they played the Nets in the first round. Of course, it was a super banged up Nets team, you know, whatever, right? There was in game two, they were the primary weapon on the other team was Caris LeVert, and you know, no disrespect to Caris LeVert, he's honestly a pretty good player. But, like, the Raptors pulled out 7 different defensive schemes over the course of that game. They just had it on the menu. It was like a Chinese menu. It was like, boom, boom, boom. Here's, like, every single dish. It was incredible.
Is you at Rolson after the...
It was me at Rolson, actually. Yeah. No.
Which, by the way...
pulling out the chicken feet of defenses.
Yeah, I got to get you to send me what we got so I can fire that up on DoorDash.
Oof.
For dinner.
I got you. But, you know... Where is playing conservative in that menu right now? Because it seems like every single game, and look, at some of these recent games, I understand. Like, again, I have no issues with the way they try to guard the Warriors last. They just didn't execute it well. To be honest, I felt better about how they guarded the Warriors, and they didn't guard the Warriors that well, but I felt better about how they guarded the Warriors and they guarded the Jazz, where it felt like, okay, so first off, it's a big difference between trapping Steph Curry at half versus trapping Mike Conley at half. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not that scared of Mike Conley at half. But they were doing that at the start of the games. And then it felt like in the Jazz game, their rotations were so slow that one pass, one rotation, they would come apart.
Ingles was picking them apart.
Yeah. Whereas in the Warriors game, yes, there were many instances where one rotation killed them. But at least I saw some late shot clock scenarios, mm-hmm. right, where they had to swing a couple of times. They had to reset a couple of times. And then they got an open three for Jordan Poole at the shot clock. Like, I'm like, fine. That's okay to me. That's great offense.
Statistically, it's one thing the Raptors still are doing well is they have the mm-hmm. best, or the best meaning slowest, defensive pace in the league. And on average, opponents are shooting with 8 seconds left on the clock.
That's good.
That's the best in the league. And we know that efficiency goes down as the shot clock does. You just got to finish out those possessions. And then that's excluding second chances, which is where, you know, you're really getting bled. There's one more thing you threw out that I just want to circle back to. You mentioned how much of this is quality of opponent.
Yeah.
Well, 5 of these last 9 games have been against top 10 offenses.
Yeah.
And
were they top 10 before I'm playing the Raptors? Not kidding.
and it's bad. They're like the effective field goal percentage in those 5 games. And effective field goal percentage is field goal percentage, which accounts for the value of threes. Mm-hmm. 63.4%. That is wild.
Yep.
That is extreme effective field goal percentage. And then you look at, okay, well, what does that look like against bottom 10 offenses? Well, it goes down, but the Raptors are 0-2 in those games and have still allowed 123 points per 100.
Yeah.
So it's not really been any better against the... Now, these are tiny, tiny samples we're chopping up.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, you can feel good. You can feel okay about how they handle the Golden State team, mm-hmm. but they're not handling the bad offenses either, really.
Yeah, like Detroit or something like that. Yeah.
So that's, you know, the Sacramento game is the one that stands out as like, oh, that's really the only.
And that was less, man. Sacramento is giving Terrence Davis like 12 whole minutes. Like, that's, I mean, what are you going to do at that point? But my thing with going back to the defense thing is like, where is keeping it simple on, like, the die here? Like, I understand that, yes, if you play a drop coverage when you don't have a great center, that's going to, like, cost you a little bit. But at the same time, like, okay, fine. If you play drop coverage, somebody drives downhill, and most of your defenders are mostly in the corners, and they're not really tagging off their guys too much. Yeah, you might like dig in from the elbow or something like that. But like you know, if they make a contested shot at the rim because your shot contests at the rim are poor because your guys are small, I can kind of live with that a little bit more than just seeing an open corner three every single time. Or even conversely, this roster, the point of having all guys who are 6'9", except for some guards, is the fact that you can switch on a couple of these actions. I've not seen them switch effectively. Sometimes they miscommunicate the switch. Those are things that they can do a better job of. But when they switch, I think my only issue when they switch is that they still press up really high. So, like, it's one thing if Fred is guarding Steph and Steph is at the top of the floor and he's, like, into his body. Like, I get that, right? Because he's quick. He's a guard. But, like, if it's, like, OG or Pascal and they're still pressing that high, I mean, isn't the point of having a long defender when you switch and you can keep guys in front? That's the whole point of the switching defense. Yes, you might have a mismatch down low. You might have a post mismatch. Someone might throw it to the rim and you might have a guard guarding a center and they dunk it. But, like, if you have a switch and you have, like, defenders who can all guard on the perimeter, including some bigs, why not switch and then just, like, try to keep them in front? Like, do they need to be as into the guys as they are right now? Because they're giving a lot of blowbys as well. Even Scottie Barnes was letting Draymond Green go past
them. There was an example of Dame doing it against Fred. And this is the issue is, like, when we talk about that they don't have traditional rim protection, if you get blown by, if you get beat one-on-one, You're toast.
Done. You're done.
Because
you have to sell out.
Kem Birch.
Wow.
Kem Birch is smart and positionally sound.
He's a good boy.
But he's not. Kem Bark. Good boy. He's not like a vertical rim. Like no one is stopping short because Kem Birch is in the way. And it's the same with a handful of other guys. And there have been examples where like, you know, because of switching or scrambling, like Malachi Flynn's the guy sliding over to help. And he's not Kyle Lowry. He's not going to slide in there and draw a charge. So, yeah. Now, what the Raptors would probably tell you is there's two ways to look at that length, right? That length gives you a cushion for being conservative, like you're explaining. So, yes. Delano Banton can go under because he's got the arm length to close out if a guard pulls up.
Yeah.
Or you can kind of sit back and switch and still cover all that ground. You can't see me right now, guys, but my arms are out wide.
Oh, man.
Not wide.
Look at this 5'8" wingspan 5'10" right here.
5'10" with a 5'11" wingspan. Let's go.
Oh, wow. Plus one.
Yeah.
Dan Tolsman right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Get Chad Sanders on the line. But no, so that's one way to look at it. But I think what Nurse's gamble is, and he hasn't said this expressly, but like watch how they play and what the numbers bear out. It's that is a good way to be conservative. Conservative is the right way to do it and keep guys in front of you. Mm-hmm. But what they are trying to do with their length instead is be disruptive and force a lot of turnovers. So they see that as, hey, yeah, you could sit back with that length and protect, or you could stay up in a guy and use that length to poke the ball free as he goes.
Or cut off passing lanes.
Because guys aren't comfortable or not. There aren't a lot of reps of, you know, I don't know, pick a backup point guard. Like Frank Jackson for the Pistons doesn't have a lot of experience operating a pick and roll where a 6'9" guy like Delano Banton is going to try to be up on him and fight over and try to poke the ball from behind. So that's kind of the gamble they're taking. And again, this is not to say one's right or wrong. It's a matter of philosophy and it's a matter of, hey, I think it's probably easier to start super aggressive and have guys scale back than start more conservative and then tell guys, hey, you got to gamble a little bit more. Like, I think this is an easier progression if they're going to get a little more conservative eventually. But yeah, I think there's probably a difference in philosophy of how Nick Nurse sees that the strength of that length versus, I mean, I'm not saying you don't see it, but you know, to you, it's a better tool for a conservative approach. And for him, maybe he sees a better tool for an aggressive approach.
Yeah, fair enough. I also think, by the way, that part of playing that aggressive approach is that you can create deflections and get the Raptors out in transition and on steals and stuff like that. And I want to talk about the offense as a whole, but I think let's take a quick break right here. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Blake Murphy. I'm your host, Will Liu, and you're listening to The Raptors Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Alex, you know what makes watching a Raptors game even better?
Knowing I get to talk to you about it on radio the next day?
No, man, I'm talking about having the perfect spread of delicious food.
Oh yeah, I love supporting my local restaurants on game nights.
That's right, and our friends at DoorDash connect you with the restaurants you love right now and right to your door.
Oh, we're talking about DoorDash. I love DoorDash, man. First, it's convenient. You can get whatever you want delivered right to your door.
And I know you love to eat, so what are you ordering during games?
Man, this week I'm thinking about having a pasta party every night, so I'm going to sample the best pastas in the city using DoorDash Monday to Friday for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Wait, what, breakfast? What's wrong with you?
I can't help it, man. With DoorDash, ordering food is so easy.
You know what? Ordering is so easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose whatever you want from where you want, and your items will be left safely outside your door with the contactless delivery drop-off setting. Plus, for a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code THEFAN25. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. Welcome back to The Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, presented by DoorDash. I'm your host, William Liu, and I'm joined by The Fan Morning Show's Blake Murphy. Blake, we had an extensive conversation in the first half about defense. To be honest, I want to talk about the defense and the offense in the first half, but listen, this is a very productive conversation. I feel like a lot of people are asking these questions, so yeah.
We got to make some adjustments now, though. We had the...
What?
Remember the playoff game where Masai came into the tunnel and grabbed Dwayne Casey and was like...
Why didn't you double? Why didn't you double LeBron? I'm totally fine with doubling LeBron.
I thought we were going to have that because... Our boss just like walked in to say hello at the break.
Mm.
And I thought that was going to be a, hey.
Why did you say DoorDash at the start? Yeah. My bad. That's my bad. Actually, no, it's not even my bad. It's Alex's bad. He scripts all my intros and outros. I can't do them. I just can't do them naturally.
Yeah, but it's just,
I mean, the sheet, man. Look, it's like highlighted. It's in like size 20 font.
And you couldn't remember to do it?
No, he's supposed to put it in here because I'm a robot.
All right. Yeah. Anyway. I don't know. When I'm mentioning the title sponsor more in the first half of the show than you are,
that's unbelievable.
I don't know. Man. DoorDash, what's up?
I got to split you off some of the promo code.
You got there's a promo code with
it? We'll talk after the show, bro. But yeah, it's lit. Shout out DoorDash. So the offense, though, I think so. Part of, as we discussed, like part of the reason the Raptors are playing so aggressively on defense and often coming up short in the stretch is that they want to play for these deflections, these steals to fuel their transition game, which stems from a belief that their offense isn't going to be good enough without some of the transition opportunities to supplement it. And right now, they are first in frequency of plays in transition.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 20% of the plays in transition. They're second in the league in transition points. And really, that only comes down to them blowing a ton of transition opportunities to start the season. I wouldn't be surprised that they're just like first in transition points of late. The thing is, though, the Raptors' offense as a whole is ninth in offensive rating. And maybe the offense isn't that bad where you need to sell out your whole defense to get like a couple of deflections here.
Yeah. Now I do think that if we dive into the numbers and get really granular with it, I think their assessment is accurate that they do need to do that. Okay. I don't think that it's, they've been better of late. Certainly. The minutes with, I know there's a chunk of the fan base that won't want to hear this, but the minutes with Pascal Siakam on the floor have been really good offensively.
Mm-hmm.
The team's been more productive offensively when he's on the court than for any other individual player. And yep, that's small sample and all that, but it's trended in the right direction lately. You mentioned the transition offense. It was pretty shaky to start the year. Like they were getting out and running.
It was more than shaky.
They were getting out and running.
Fast breaks and they were missing.
Yeah. And so here's the thing. Here's the tough thing about transition play. So the Raptors, this is for the entire season at this point. It is firmly trended upward, but they're averaging 1.18 points per transition opportunity.
Okay.
The very best half court offense in the league averages just over a point.
Yeah.
That's per half court possession.
Yeah, that's fair.
So that tells you how much more efficient, like, so roughly, there's a rounding error here, but about 18% more effective, a very good transition defense or offense versus a very good half court offense. The problem is that the Raptors have the most transition opportunities and it's less than 20% of your plays. So does it make sense to build something around optimizing 1/5 of your offensive plays? That's where, again, we can get back to these kind of philosophical questions.
Sure.
But I do think that their general idea that, hey, our half court offense probably isn't going to be effective enough to carry us. And right now they're per cleaning the glass, they're 23rd in half court offense, is, you know, that's okay. It's probably about where we expected coming in the season. If we had tried to pick a ranking, But that necessitates that you prioritize some transition play, and it necessitates that your defense be a lot better than 30th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Does Pascal coming back, though? Like, I understand playing that at the start of the season without P, mm-hmm. but since he's come back, and the fact that he honestly has looked pretty sharp offensively.
Sure has.
Does that maybe tilt the calculus in terms of, like, okay, maybe now that he's back and we can, you know, score a little bit more, that we can sort of at least not gamble as much? I mean, to be honest, like, by the way, Pascal coming back, he has not been fully ready defensively.
No.
That's the part that has been behind. I mean, I know there was a lot of criticism because you would criticize a guy for having only 4 points.
Yeah, he had a game
was bad.
He had one stinker, yep.
Yeah, but other games he's been good. The thing is, defensively, he's really been a few steps behind. Even in terms of the rotation, things like that, like, those haven't really been there for him. So, again, maybe if Pascal's back and your offense is doing better, can you scale back the defense to the point where you can be a little bit more solid? Because, look, last I checked, getting a defensive rebound after contesting a good shot also allows you to maybe spark the fast break, maybe not in the same high-quality way as if you strip it from a guard and you have nobody to beat downhill. Then, of course, that's great. That's the best-case scenario. But at the same time, if your defense is 30th, I don't think you're going to do anything in this league.
Yeah, and that's the tough part. And
it's very tough, man. I don't know. This is why people are upset at Nick Nurse. No. Clearly, everyone knows Nick is a really good coach, a fantastic coach. But, like, of late, it's sort of looking like, okay, this you know, you might have to change it up. That's the whole thing with Nick. He's willing to do anything,
but
right?
It's also, again, I don't want to speak for Nick Nurse because I don't know. But, like, you look at where we are in the season and the fact that, yes, not everyone on the team is inexperienced, mm-hmm. but the average player on this team coming this season was 25 years old and had 3 years of experience.
Yeah, and that's Goran out, and I think they're literally the youngest team.
Yeah, and, you know, he's going to play his 28 minutes the once every 7 or 8 games spreads out because he's averaging 40. But otherwise, so this is not a team. Like, this, the Raptors' defense is complicated. It's a difficult defense to execute. And, like, that's especially true if you're a center, and it's why they were so good with Marc Gasol. But, yeah, it's tough. So this is where you've got to make some tougher decisions. Now, in terms of Siakam being back, what does that change? So let's, again, small samples here. But Pascal Siakam, and again, I know there are people who won't believe this or be like, oh, well, it doesn't matter until it's in the clutch or whatever. But for 4 seasons in a row, has had an 86th percentile or better impact on this team's half-court offense. So that means he's among the top 10 to 15% at his position in terms of driving half-court offense relative to when he's off the court. That's great. That is borne out early in the numbers as well. Again, he has the best offensive rating on the team. The other thing here is, so would you agree with the statement that the starting five, when healthy, that group of Fred, OG, Pascal, Scotty, and Gary Trent, those are your 5 most important offensive players.
Yeah, yeah.
When at least 3 of them are on the court together this year, the Raptors are scoring 114 points per 100 possessions.
Right.
You're fine as long as you have a couple of those guys. Yeah. It hasn't been that big a deal. So, yeah, maybe there's a little bit of room. But also, like, maybe the other element is like, getting out and running like that is not just about the buckets that end up getting classified as transition. It's about, you know, hey, you rush down the court and a small has to grab a big.
Yeah.
Or, you know, someone who's too slow has to grab OG mm-hmm. or something like that.
Yeah.
And so then even when you're in the half court, you're starting off from positions of
there's some
advantage.
Yeah.
So this is where, like, you could pull at threads of this and change your mind about it as we pull at more threads. So, but all of that is to say that I've been pretty optimistic's not the right word, but I've been pleased with how the offense has looked, even though they've been really bad lately.
Well, Pascal's been promising.
It's all defense. And then a small element of, like, the ball movement hasn't been great.
Yeah, well, they're 28th in assists.
That's when you don't hit shots, it's hard to get assists. But
you can't get assists on putbacks, which is, I think, the number one way for the Raptors to score outside of transition is their offensive rebounding rate is
what's
also their first.
What's the two biggest... biggest ways that they're getting half-court buckets right now. Putbacks and Gary Trent isolation mid-range pull-ups.
You know what? Never mind, actually. I changed my mind. The offense is in dire straits if that's the case.
Yeah, and then they might get OG back, right? Like OG Anunoby could potentially play tomorrow night against Memphis. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then that's another, like, yeah, OG was getting given a lot more playmaking responsibility and self-creation responsibility. Also one of the best shooters.
Yeah.
Doesn't hurt.
Absolutely.
I have a question for you. So yeah, we talked about, I think it was last week, maybe it was the week prior. We talked about, hey, when this team is healthy and if they start those five guys, or even if they don't and those five guys just play together a lot, what is the optimal usage split for these guys? So I went into PVPstats.com and broke down, again, that same stat that I just said about how good the offense has been when three or more of that group of five is on the court. And when there's three or more of those guys, Siakam's usage is just under 24% right now. Barnes, Van Vliet, and Anunoby are all within a rounding point of 21%.
Okay.
And Gary Trent's at 18%. He actually doesn't use a ton of possessions when three or more of those guys are playing together.
Well, they know that if they pass it to him, he's going to shoot.
Yes.
So.
And yes, I know that that doesn't add up to 100%, but that's because I'm leaving out the other lineup combination, like Cam and Precious and stuff like that.
It's like 102%.
Do you think that is the right split, roughly, in terms of when there's three or more of those top five offensive players, or top five most important offensive players, 24 for Siakam, Barnes, Van Vliet, and Anunoby hanging around 21, Trent as the low usage man?
Yeah, sounds about right. Yeah, like I'm really happy with that split. I think in terms of your half-court initiator, Pascal's probably the best in terms of getting an advantage in either scoring the ball or distributing to someone else. I would say Fred is probably the next best at it, just based on this season, but Fred is also a bit of a matchup kind of situation. Like, for example, the Warriors, the matchup was really poor in the sense that they kind of almost zoned up, had Draymond essentially ignore Ken Burch and Scottie Barnes and always help at the rim. There weren't a lot of great advantages for Fred to create in that game, but Fred has done a pretty good job offensively. And then OG, even though, like, of course, OG has shown some pretty good shot creation numbers, I think he's pretty good off the ball because he's a really good spot-up shooter right now. And he's also scored a bunch in transition. He just looks really efficient and sharp in his role, and of course he'll have a few situations where he isolates just like everyone else, but he's been really solid, especially, you know, since the first two games of the season. So I have no complaints there. Like, that makes sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just want to throw those numbers at you because, again, we teed it up as Siakam was coming back. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, again, we'll see. OG will come back and one of these guys might fall out of the starting lineup if they want to continue to start Ken Burch, who's been a pretty good, like, statistically, he's been a pretty good stabilizer for them. Yes. He has the second best net rating on the team next to Fred VanVleet. And I think that, you know, in a 15-game sample for Kem, you got to be careful there because there's context of who's playing with who and stuff like that. But he also came off the bench for a little bit with bench units that weren't particularly good. And now he started for a little bit. And those lineups have been fairly good. So do you see Kem staying in the – I know I'm kind of stealing the host chair from you here.
That's all good, man.
But I want your opinions too. Do you see Kem staying with the starters if OG's back?
I kind of want to see him try it. Yeah, I for me right now, it's the house is on fire in terms of the defense. I need to get the defense fixed. I don't care as much about the offense. I don't care this guy might be upset with his role coming out or whatever. Whatever they can do to get the defense solid, and I know that's not just purely the starting lineup, because the starting lineup actually with the small ball group of no center with Scottie, OG, and Pascal has actually posted a defensive rating of 100 as a three-man lineup. Like, that's not bad. Or as a five-man lineup.
Yeah. Weirdly, there's, again, in 50 minutes, there's tons of noise, but they've been sunk by the offense, and a lot of that is just, like variance on the shooting stuff, right? Any lineup data, so for anyone who hears us referencing this and wants to draw conclusions from it, at this point in the season, we're a very small sample, but also you got to dig in as like, okay, is there, you know, if a lineup's shooting 45% on threes or allowing 45% on threes, like those things are going to stabilize over time a little bit.
Yeah, fair enough. But honestly, this talk about the starting lineup, like, I'm not going to say I'm tired of it, but for me, I'm just like, whatever Nick decides to go with it, just run with it for a while, give it like a stretch of 10 games, hope everyone's healthy. And then sort of reevaluate from there. To be honest, I don't really see that many bad options. Like, it's not like one starting lineup is clearly bad or even clearly superior to the others. So for me, I'm actually kind of cool with, you know, whatever Nick decides to do here. Actually, I think the Raptors have a couple of guys who have – they have more starters than five, I guess.
Six guys who have a good claim to be starters. Exactly. So the other element here is – so the lineup where – so there's two possibilities as I see it, right? Mm-hmm. It could be if Birch stays as a starter, you would have either Trent or Barnes come out. That lineup, the lineup where theoretically Barnes comes out,
yep,
has only played 6 minutes together.
Yep.
The lineup where theoretically Trent comes out has played 0 minutes together. Mm. So you're still at 0 minutes of Van Vliet, Barnes, Ananobi, Siakam, Birch.
Yep.
That's a giant lineup, by the way. That's 4 6'8", 6'9" cool guys and Van Vliet. We haven't seen it yet, which is a little – obviously, it's not that surprising when you get into who's been in and out of the lineup and stuff.
Yeah.
But had you said, hey – 18, 19 games in the season, you wouldn't have seen this. We would have been like, well, what the heck? That's like, if not the number one, it's the number two lineup you would have wanted to see a lot of coming into this year. So I'd like to see it. Just to see what it looks like.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, but for me, I want to change the topic here to Scotty Barnes, because this is the longest we've ever done an episode of the Raptor Show without talking about our prize son here, Scotty. By the way, you were listening to the Raptor Show presented by DoorDash, and I'm here with Blake Murphy. Okay, so Scotty Barnes. Is he hitting the rookie wall? Because the last two games, shooting 4 of 19 from the field, 1 of 10 from the paint. The other game, he was 2 of 7 from the free throw line. My main concern here is that his smiles per 46 and hand claps per 48 are both down per PBP stats.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Why is PBP stats using different minutes, like per 46 for one and per 48 for the other?
We need a per 40 numbers just for Nick Nurse himself.
Because that's how much every starter plays every game. I'm one of your reply guys on Twitter. I love your tweets and I like to reply to them. Sometimes the replies are even serious, and I pointed out the other day, and I think the broadcast made a talking point about it eventually too, is that Scotty Barnes has almost played as many minutes this year as he did all of his freshman year at Florida State.
Yep.
And that's the case for a lot of rookies. We're coming off of a shortened college season. Mm-hmm. Those games are shorter. They play fewer games in general.
They didn't travel nearly as much either.
Right. Yeah. So there is a big change in element, especially if you're a super high energy guy like Barnes. So I could see it a little bit. Like, he's averaging a ton of minutes.
Yeah.
And playing a pretty good role. So there's also, when we talk about the rookie wall, it's not just fatigue. It's also like, hey, there's 15 games of tape on you now.
Yeah.
There's 15 games of tendencies. Defender, like, look at what Draymond did to him.
Yeah.
You're telling me Draymond didn't sit down with Jamma and be like, hey, run me through what you were seeing in July. Run me through what his first couple games look like. How are we stopping this guy?
Damn, he's getting the summer league scouting report from Jamma. That's wild. But yeah, I mean,
I think Jamma was actually gone by summer league, but I think he was probably around for the draft process.
Yeah,
maybe not. I don't know.
Wow, what a traitor!
Sleeper agent. Yeah,
is that what we're starting here? Jamma Mahalalela slander.
Well, no, it's either that or when the Raptors and Warriors meet in the finals, it's going to be revealed that Jamma's been a sleeper agent the whole time, and he's gonna sink them from inside.
When the grass is cut, the snakes are revealed, just like
Raptors just got to get there. That's all.
I would love to see that, man. Raptors 905 versus the Santa Cruz Warriors in the finals.
Yeah. But no, Barnes has been having a rough go, right? And you expect, like, look at the other rookies around the league. Before he was hurt, so it's not the fairest thing, but Evan Mobley had an 0 of 11 game.
Yes.
Jalen Suggs, Jalen Green, and Cade Cunningham have all really struggled with their efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Being a rookie in the NBA and being a rookie who's tasked with a lot of responsibility out of the gate is really difficult.
Yeah.
And Barnes has the benefit of he's playing in a better a better team environment than Cade and the Jalens. Maybe not Mobley, because the Cavs are pretty fun, mm-hmm. but a lot of that is also because of Mobley. Anyway, all that's to say that it's hard to be a rookie, and it's hard to carry 20% usage when you were not a super high usage guy in college and your roles, you know, they're empowering him to do a lot. Of course he's going to have ups and downs. So whether it's a rookie wall thing or just him figuring it out, you know, I think you, this is par for the course and this is what you expect. And I think if there's one thing to be super encouraged about is the scoring and defense have been up and down, but the playmaking has really trended in the right direction.
Especially since Pascal's come back. Actually,
So he's averaging 4.3 assists over the last nine, and he's had five or more in three consecutive games. So he's doing a little bit of, when we, you know, you look back to that Pascal 4-point game, what do we ask Pascal to do to raise the floor in games where he doesn't have it as a scorer? It's like, well, you need to defend and you need to create for others. And, you know, the defense part of that has been a little shaky for all the Raptors of late, but I think it's a good sign that, you know, Barnes is pretty comfortable playmaking, at least, even when he's struggling with the other parts of his game.
Yeah. I also got to say, the thumb injury is...
It might be a thing.
...is a big factor here for me.
He's still wearing the wrap on it, right?
Yes, he is. And you'll still see him grab it during the course of the game. I mean, look, you have a thumb injury and you're playing basketball all the time. You're probably going to aggregate it like five, six times a game.
It's like having a hangnail as a blogger.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's exactly what that's like. He was shooting 55% from the field before the thumb injury, 41% since coming back from it. I'm not going to say it's only because of the thumb, but then when you see him miss like tons of shots in close the last couple games, it's probably it. Because his touch was amazing at the start of the season.
It's also, he's been more hesitant to shoot the three. So he only took four three-point attempts over his first eight games after the thumb injury. And it's not like he was a high-volume guy before, but he was averaging over one a game before that. And he did take three against Golden State, which was great to see. But yeah, this is, and Nick Nurse kind of got on him for it. And whether that's a thumb thing or just the natural ebb and flow of kind of a low-event stat, yeah, him only taking four three-point attempts, like going 0 for 4 over eight games, coming off a thumb injury, looks a certain way.
Yeah, fair enough. I trust that Scotty would be okay. And honestly, if they moved into the bench, which is one viable option as well, depending on what Nick wants to do in the lineup, I think he could still be productive off the bench as well. His role would be a little bit different though, because I do think that he needs to play with more spacing around him generally. But I mean, I guess I can use that for any player.
Yeah.
Are you concerned about that?
Anyone benefits from the spacing. The concern that I would have about, and I still think even if Barnes starts, give him a quick hook and have him come back in with the bench. You want to expand his playmaking profile and see what he can do in those groups. I do think there could be a fun second unit identity with the kind of Delano, Scotty Barnes, and whichever of the bigs, probably Precious, stays in the mix. Maybe Boucher still has a path to minutes, but that group, hey, you're long and you're fast and you're getting out in transition, has a fun identity. But yeah, in the half court, you know, Delano and Scotty Barnes would probably both suffer a little bit from playing a lot of minutes together. You can alleviate that some by having Fred on the court as a spacer, but then that's also another ball handler who's maybe taking those ball handling reps. So what are you trying to accomplish in those minutes? Is it the development? Are you trying to develop and win those minutes? You have to ask some questions there. And that's the thing that I actually almost think it's the more interesting part of, hey, who's going to start when this team's healthy is, okay, and those are your starters, but what's the staggering strategy with OG Fred and Pascal, and maybe even Scotty Barnes, to make sure that every one of those transitional bench units is in a position to succeed? Because, you know, you don't want to be trotting Svi out there 30 minutes a game just so you always have a shooter, but you also need some shooting in those lineups. And this is, you know, if you were going to make an argument for Gary Trent to go to the bench or be that first starter out who comes back in with the bench, it's that whatever bench unit you're looking at could use the shooting and could use the self-creation.
All right, fair enough. Before we go, super quick rapid fire.
Yeah.
Kyle Lowry reiterated to Mark Spears of the Undefeated this week that he will retire as a Raptor by signing a one-day deal, just as he said previously. Will you one day retire from the blogging game on a one-day deal with Raptors Republic?
Yeah, absolutely. What is it, Raptors Republic coin now or whatever they got going
now? We got a coin, yeah.
Yeah, we'll negotiate, but yeah.
Okay, wow, this guy said I got to get some crypto for all the times I wrote quick reaction in 2012, 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many A's were you giving on that in that season, man?
A's?
Yeah.
Oh, in the quick reaction? Not a lot, man.
I love when people complain about the grades. Like, yo, come on, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just trying to get to the lottery that year.
Fair enough. The other rapid fire one I had, it was Fred VanVleet is doing a video series with DoorDash to profile five restaurateurs across Canada. Give me your top five on the spot because I have not had lunch.
Top five restaurants.
Just maybe even in the area because I need lunch.
Okay, I'll try to keep it local. Rolson, obviously number one for the championship tie-in.
Okay.
Ramenishin is my favorite ramen spot.
Oh, wow,
and because you and Yuta are going on your ramen hang eventually.
I mean, I don't know, maybe, but it would be nice, yes.
There's a place in the West End called Barkada, which is a Filipino place that our guy Adam Robles from Raptors Republic put me onto.
Okay.
It's a really good chicken. I hear the music playing now, so maybe I only get three.
No, you can just give
Seven
me
Lives
more.
Tacos, Crown and Dragon for wings.
All right, cool. I will check most of those out.
Try
actually.
To keep it versatile.
There you go. That does it for us today. I'm your host, Will Liu, and you've been listening to The Raptor Show, presented by DoorDash on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe, and please rate and review our show. Thanks again to Blake Murphy, and we will talk to you tomorrow. And before we go, a message from our presenting sponsor. Discover the best eats of your neighborhood on DoorDash without leaving your home. So many options to choose from, and ordering is easy. For a limited time, you can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code THEFAN25. Fuel up for tip-off. Order today through the DoorDash app or DoorDash.com. DoorDash. Delicious. Delivered. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.